accession number 11377, reel 7.
Mr. Bill Bateman, reel 7. Whilst you're at Dual Alley, Mr. Bateman, did you get involved in training and manoeuvres?
Well, yes. We started what they call the battalion manoeuvres, and we're going on. There was two signallers distributed to each company, and they carried a heliograph with us and a stand. We carried a telephone. We also carried a signal lamp, and we also carried a pair of flags. That's additional to our packs, our all equipment and rifles. And two was to each company. Now then, there was at the battalion HQ, there was what you call an exchange operator, and then there was a line party, and all the there was a line party detail to take run telephone lines out to each company once they got in positions, and they were all earth return. There was no twin cable; it was all single cable, and it was all done three. And I can't remember how the exchanges. They were more like a. Can't remember now what they were like. But all you had to do was, when you call the exchange, you just press the buzzer, and it lit a very little lamp in the exchange. And then also, mainly, when we were stationary, we used to use either heliograph at daytime and the Lucas signal lamp at night time. And also, during daytime, we could use either flags, either semaphore, or could use the Morse code. And we used to, when each company moved up, the two signallers disconnected they would disconnect the telephone, and the line party would go and reel the line in. And then each one had a different company to reel out to. And then we'd move on again. And as they were moving, we'd move in communication by flags. Either semaphore or the Morse code with the flag washing. And that was more like routine. Same thing repeated over and over again. And then we would have our meals all brought up in the carts. There was no more to transport them, but all horse and carts. It was quite good and all. The coast did the best, but the signal was always more like routine.
Did you stay close to the commanding officers?
Well, there was the company commanders. Now, the signal also was what you call a runner, messenger. He was also a messenger. Now, if the battalion was on the company was on the move, and the signaller who couldn't get in touch with the HQ, say like in a valley or a hill between us, anything like that, they would send one of the signallers back to the company HQ with a message, to battalion HQ with a message. And then if there was a message to go back, the CO, we would give the CO the message. He would always come into the signal office, and then it would we'd give it to the CO, well, more like the adjutant used to accept them. And then if there was a message, would give it back to the signal, and we'd take it back to the company HQ.
Did it work very well?
It did. It worked very well. And when we got stationary again, how would we go there? We'd try and get in visual communication first, and then stay in visual communication till the telephone line went out. Because when they stopped, the first thing in the signal, of course, they would be given a bearing. The company commander would give the signaller a bearing and read on his map, and he would point his lamp or his heliograph towards HQ, and we would pick it up.
Did you have any signalling link between your own battalion HQ and a higher office, you know, brigade or whatever.
No, we did mainly battalion manoeuvres, because we were the only battalion in that area. And talking about battalion, it was more like two companies, because two companies were already in Bombay, and they used to do the same when they used to come to Doolally, because there wasn't facilities in Bombay to do these manoeuvres. There was what they call, there was a great big lake there and a big dam we used to go to, and Wally camped beside it. And that reminds me, when he first went out there, we all went into the, had a swim in the lake, and we started sunbathing when we all got sunburned. And we still had to wear our equipment when it was. There was no excuse there for us, because we're all sunburnt, and we were sore as well. And the company commander and the CEO says, oh, you must put your equipment on, you can't go sick. Of course, if they went sick, the medical officer would put us down as malignant. Of course, you've got what you call a self-infected wounds.
Did you get any kind of treatment? Did they give you any kind of ointment, anything to put on it?
No. Didn't give us any ointment at all. All we'd do is when we come off the scheme, come back to the billeting area, we'd just all step off and jump in the river again, in the lake.
Were there any other kinds of illnesses or diseases that you were prone to?
While we were at Doolally, there was an outbreak of cholera. The natives were dying by the dozen, and we had to go down to the hospital twice a day for cholera injections. We prayed on the morning, each company would have a different time to go down, and then in the evening we'd go back again at night time. I think it lasted for nearly 3 weeks.
Did they affect you? Was there any after effects?
There was no after effect, and all the time, through that cholera epidemic, there was not a soldier died of it. It was just the natives in the villages, like. Well, mainly after the training and everything, after this qualifying, we would get down to basic, and night time it was all sports, and it was nearly compulsory, because there was football, but there wasn't much cricket at Doolally, and there was just a little bit of hockey, but it was mainly football, and I was only kept a reserve of the football team. I was a reserve goalkeeper, and as luck happened, I never let the goal in, but they wouldn't keep me going.
Did the officers join in with the sport with you, or did they have their own sporting?
No, they used to come sometimes referee. The sergeant refereed a lot, and some of the officers used to come. Well, they used to come and walk. Talk to you, and sometimes they would. If the signal platoon played a platoon in the company, the platoon officer would play as well. And sometimes we couldn't. Whereas a company team, we couldn't form a company team because we were only what they call a signal platoon. But we still played them. And there was only two companies there then. Well, now we were there, we were with air and the machine gunners. And then sometimes we would have a change. We'd go out, the machine gunners would give us a demonstration of the collective fire. And the signals had to go out then. We used to send a signal with it. There used to be two machine guns set at a way back over on the. They used to. Put a heliograph up, and we used to receive it, and we used to send a message back to the machine gunners to open fire. And what they used to do, we were about maybe 100 yards away from to the left out of the road, and they had to use a lot of these used all cold water in them. Water used to keep it cold, and it was representing men's heads. And they have 20 or 30 of them. And then they give a signal for the machine guns up. And machine gun officer used to describe the rate of the fire, how it affected the fire. Mm. The machine gun was more like a forward oar, you know, if you get what I mean, egg shape, laid flat down, forward, the front end and the sharp end. And the Lewis gun, it was opposite. It was that way, left to right. See? Well, the machine gun was from bottom to top. And the Lewis gun was the opposite way, the cone of fire. Mm.
What machine gun was it?
It was a Vickers.
Was it an effective weapon?
Yes, it was an effective weapon. But I think it was the effective weapon, I think, I can't remember, because we never had any training on the machine gun. And I think it was somewhere about the 600 yards. And the Lewis gun was the same. Mm.
At Dulally, when your training and your day and your sport had finished, what did you do then?
Well, sometimes you used to go down to the cinema. There was a cinema there. And by it was a funny how it used to show a reel, and then it was 10 minutes interval, and then we get another reel. And we had to walk down, and I can't remember, but some of the good old films you used to see, like black and white ones, like. Mm. But that's more entertainment. And then there was the canteen. We had the canteen, and there was not such a thing as tombola. We never used to play tombola. In Dulally, we had a billiard table in the private's mess and canteen, and also there was a billiard table in the corporal's mess. But mainly, we used to stop in the old barracks, in the barrack room, and have a good chat and talk about things and everything like. And Johnny Bullen, Lance Corporal, he got an old radio, and he used to sit and listen to the BBC on that. And that's where we heard the recognition of King Edward the VII. Mm. The Eighth, was it? Mm. Edward the Eighth.
Did you get involved in any ceremonial occasions?
Yes, actually, I think it was every New Year's Day. We used to be a big parade. And used to proclaim the King of England, King of Queen, Empress and Emperor of India. It was always a big Sun Morning parade. Well, Dulally wasn't so very big, like. But Bombay, it was a big parade. And there used to be all the Indians, regiments, round about. And there was the artillery there. And they used to be down on the race course. But the best laugh was we'd have to march down. And we used to let the artillery get well ahead of us, because he said, the day I'll catch up with them. And by the time we got the race course, we were still there, like.
Mm. Had you had any troubles with the natives at all up to this time?
No troubles at all. Only trouble was when we got to Bombay. It was when we used to go down and get these riots.
When did you move to Bombay?
Well, I can't remember. I think we moved to Bombay in 1935. For about Christmas, and then we spent 6 months down in Bombay, and then we moved back to Dulally again. And then we were 6 months up in Dulally, and then we moved back to Bombay, the Calabar Barracks. And in January of 37, I think it was, yes, January 37, we started preparing to move to Khartoum.
So can we have a look at Bombay? You moved into Bombay. What was the name of the barracks you moved into?
Calabar Barracks.
And what were they like?
They were very good. They were two-storey buildings. And there was... they were divided... I forget now how many there was. There was one... there was about three blocks. There was a company in one block. There was a HQ company in the other block. And then there was another infantry company in the other one. And they were all, instead of being the old type beds that we used to, there were the like in England, they push in and that's it. There was just one complete bed with the wire mattress on, and still had the three biscuits. And we, every time we moved, we had to empty these. When we moved from Doolally, we emptied them all, and we moved. We had empty three biscuit covers. And in Bombay, we used to fill them up again with coir. Mm. That was every time we moved, because you couldn't take your biscuits with you. And
were they comfortable to lie?
Oh yes, pretty comfortable, because you made them yourself. See, you made them how you wanted yourself. And you still had your two blankets and two sheets and a pillowcase. And every Sunday morning, it used to be a routine, what you call debugging. Oh, Bombay Calaver Barracks was ridden with bugs. And we used to have a blow lamp every Sunday after church prayer. We used to tip all the beds out and take them out on the verandas or sometimes outside. And get the blow lamps on, and QM, he suggested, there's plenty of soft carbolic soap, and we used to put that in there on the ridges. It used to stop them down a bit. Mm. But it was terrible in Bombay for bugs. But we enjoyed it. It was more entertainment to go out in Bombay. You had cinemas to go out to. And there was, could go to these church socials down the town. There was the Methodist one, because I was a Methodist. And we went down, and we used to go about nearly twice a week. Mm. But we were going a Sunday morning to church, and then it was maybe a Tuesday and a Thursday. Because Thursday was always a half day holiday. Instead of being Wednesday, it was Thursday. A half day holiday, and then Saturday was a half day holiday, and Sunday was holiday after church parade.
So you went to these socials, and you'd be meeting civilian people.
Yes, right.
How did you get on with them?
Oh, got on very well with them, because we knew the padre. Mm.
Did they relate to you pretty well? The civilian people. There was no standoffishness.
Oh no, there was no standoffish at all. And there was also there was a swimming pool we used to go often to, what they called Bridge Candy. It was a European only. Used to go on the front, used to get a bus down. Could get a bus right to Bridge Candy. Mm. And there was also another one near the barracks, but it was more like for natives and Eurasians, and they never bothered about them. But the cinema was good. There was... I can't remember the name of them. The Capital, I think, was in Crawford Marketplace. There was an English one, Fred Astaire films. And then there was the one in, I forget now what that one was. There was three cinemas all together in Bombay, showing English language films.
Did you get any newsreels with the films showing, you know, the rise of Germany and all the things that were going on?
Oh yes, there was still the newsreels. The cinema was just the same. There was no adverts. They used to get the short films, and then they used to get the newsreels. Then you get a couple of cartoons, and they used to get the main feature. Mm. They're quite good and all. The cinemas, they're quite.
Were these English-only cinemas?
Natives could go in. Because there was, on the side of this, there was another screen, on the side with the Indian writing on. Mm.
Did your seats mixed or were you segregated?
No, we weren't segregated. We all went together. We could sit there anywhere. And they were quite comfortable and all. And they were all, and it surprised me, they were all nearly as air-conditioned. Because you could come in from outside, where it would be red hot and be lovely and cool inside. Mm. But then we weren't very far. Calaver Barracks wasn't very far from the seafront. There was the, where the sea was, but they saw the sea wall. And we could go up and swim there if we wanted. But I didn't risk going to the sea. It was a bit rough now and then. But we often look out every Thursday, about maybe five or just before dusk, could see the P&O liner come in and see right all the mails coming. Mm.
Did you have any feelings of homesickness?
Never thought about it. No. More like occupied, more like a family. It was quite good out there. Because you knew the lads in the platoon, and also mentioned could play mahjong. Mm. But this was what little money we had, like. Because I think the main was 2 nights a day I had. Mm.
Other than your signalling duties, had you to do other duties?
Yes, we did guard duties, but not very often.
Did they differ from what you'd done in England in the way that they were formed?
No, the routine was same, but we never mounted with full pack. We just had, if you had the photograph there, you saw, just had the pouches and the leather belt. Mm. But as I say, on the night time, we were armed, instead of a 303 rifle, we were armed with a shotgun rifle. Mm. And there was always two of us on guard. There was never just a single sentry. There was always two. Mm.
And were you guarding the gates of the barracks?
Just the guard room. Mm. And it was the same as we were in Bannockburn in Bombay. We had the searchlights. But in Doolally, we didn't have the searchlights. Every time there was anybody that didn't acknowledge the... And that's always used to turn the guard out. Mm. And they used to... each man had a post to go to. And mainly, when it was nearly turned out, it was the Audi officer coming around visiting, because you had to visit between 12 midnight and 6 on the Rivali. Because he was allowed to have the guard once a day, once at night and once during the day. And the CO could have it decided once. But many times the CO was just, he would just wave his hand and the sentry just used to present arms to him. But if he did no signal, he used to turn the guard out. Mm. Just once a day for him. Mm. He was entitled to that guard turnout for once a day.
Had your CO changed from the last officer that you gave?
I can't remember who did I say it was now?
It was Churchill, I believe he said.
Oh no, that was in the 1st Battalion. That was in Catrick. I can't remember the CO. I know Nigel Port was the adjutant. Colonel Astad. And Lysai Griffin was the second in command.
What were they like?
They were quite good. Mm. Never used to see much of the CO. But Lysai Griffin, he was a good sportsman. He used to like coming and watching the sports and sometimes going playing basketball and everything like. Actually, it wasn't a netball. It was more like a netball, you know.
Did you have any natives attempting to steal from you out of the barracks?
No. We had the, what they call the charwallers.
Natives working for you?
What they call the, what did they call them now? The native bearers, that they used to call, they had the barber. He used to come and shave you on the morn. And he used to bring cups of tea around about 10 o'clock. He used to get the charwaller. He used to be half under a cup. They used to just take our mugs and used to fill it up. There used to be what they call chico, a young lad used to come. He used to fill it up. He used to get tick off him as well. He used to pay for the weekend. We got on well with them as well. But they were very sorry to see us go when we left. So we couldn't take them when we left Bombay. And we used to get the same ones. It used to come to Doolally, and the same one used to come to Bombay. But they used to travel on the train, not the same train as us, on another train, like, and it would come down. But where they stopped, I don't know.
Did you have any problems with the natives in Bombay? Were there any riots?
Yes, there was a lot of riots. These Muslims and that. Used to often be. That's when we had RSC, Royal Army Service Corps, and there was wagons, and there was all wired and mesh, were all covered in wire. But the signals hadn't much to do with them. It was more like the duty companies. We didn't have anything to do with them. We never.
Did things get particularly nasty from time to time?
Well, by way I can gather, like, I never went down that way, like, and sometimes the lads would come through and they had a great big fun there, they shot one bloke. Because then, they used to tell us what we used to ask, well, where would you go on? Well, we used to get out the trucks and we used to line up, and there was always a magistrate, a native magistrate there, and they used to. He used to give the order, and he would tell them to shout in his own language, tell them to stop. And if they took no notice, the magistrate would tell the officer in charge to pick the marksman out and shoot, give him a certain man, and if he wouldn't stop, to shoot one. But whether they did, I don't know, like, because I never was down there. But I think myself, there's one or two were shot.
Were there areas of Bombay which was closed to you, couldn't go into?
Yes. The
out of bounds.
Yes, there was, when we first went down there, was quite a lot of out of bounds. That was the bottle areas, and but there was that much men there. We used to think it good. We used to get a taxi. We used to go down, and man, the taxi men were good, and they could race the MPs. They could outrun the MPs with their taxis. And mind, they were dead as dry. They used to fly. You've seen these on the films. Yeah? You should have seen the taxi drivers in Bombay. They were quite good. But eventually, we got a new brigadier. And he says, there's that much... he found out that there was that much men being brought up and that put in guard room for being out of bounds. He put everything in the bounds. They took all the outer bounds and put them out. Only thing that was out of bounds was the docks. They never allowed down the docks, unless you were on official duty.
Was this a dangerous area, the dock?
I don't know. Why they put it out of bounds, I don't know.
Who was the brigadier that changed our list? Do you know his name?
Oh, I forget now. No, I forget his name now.
Did you have many men who called VD and that kind of thing through going to the brothel?
There was some VD. And they used to be sent to Pune.
It was an offence?
Yes, it was an offence. They used to use the proficiency pier. And then they had to do what they call, when they come back after the treatment and the cured and everything, they had to get the proficiency pier back. They had to do so many markmen's parades, what they call markmen's parades. That was 5 to 6 on a night on the square. And the order sergeant used to start. Used to take them. Sometimes the RSM would take them. And he was quite a nice fellow, was the RSM. RSM got it. Of course, he took over from what a bloke called Ogie Pearson. Ogie Pearson, he was the RSM at Barrickpore. And he got made quartermaster, the quartermaster, captain quartermaster.
What are your recollections of the NCOs at this time?
NCOs was good. All the NCOs were good. There was no really bad. They didn't. Some did say they just took advantage of the stripe, like especially Lance Gore when he got made up, and that he thought it'd be good. Like, but he got calmed down and everything. But Corporal Lewis, he was a genius, as I said before. He could read the book and send a message on the Morse code. And we all used to say, wish we could do the signal like he did them.
And amongst your own friends in the battalion, were there any that you recollect?
Well, there was quite a few. There was Nubbon. But see, later on, we left them, you know. We had one called Mexon. And he was one of the health and strength men, you know, lads. And he got a full tattoo of health and strength state sign on the on his back. And then we had a chap called Ralphie Oliver. He got an Indian, full dress Indian's face on his chest. And then there was Lloyd Wilson. He was what he called, and he was a health and strength. He used to go a health and strength and that.
It wasn't an offence to get tattooed.
Oh no, I want one here. I wish I'd never get it on.